Hello and welcome to the Fastest Lap Podcast, helping you to stay up to date with the fast-moving world of Formula One. Today we review the Spanish GP, a race dictated by the strategy and close racing between our championship leaders. My name is Jan, and as ever, I'm with Fergal. Hello everyone to episode 37 of the Fastest Lap Podcast, and I have to be honest with you, after Russia I feared another dull race in Barcelona with not so many overtakes, but hey, they proved me wrong and we saw a very enjoyable race. So let's discuss it in detail. And I mean, the king of qualifying to start with that must have been Fernando Alonso. I mean, P7 in a McLaren. How the hell did he do that?
Yeah, I mean, all season long we've been talking about how much the McLaren Honda is struggling, and you know, out of the blue he just produces this mega lap and puts the car up there, you know, front of the midfield.
Amazing. Yeah.
And I think it just sort of, it just shows really the class that Fernando Alonso still has, and with age it seems he's just getting better. You know, his skills have seemingly improved, or at least they haven't. They've nowhere near gone downhill. I mean, at the very least, they've stayed the same as they were when he was winning championships. And again, it is kind of sad though, because it's just a reminder of, you know, a talent like that that's being wasted down at the back of the grid. And the fact that he's able to produce a lap like that in a car like that is, phenomenal.
Yeah, and it's not like you don't need a good engine in Barcelona. Of course, it's not that power sensitive, but still there are two straights, and it's not like Monaco or Hungary or something. So, yeah, I was really... So the McLaren chassis isn't that bad after all, maybe. And yeah, as you said, I mean, the gap between him and Van Dorn at the end, I think, was massive. It was like 1.5 seconds or something between the Q1 time of Van Dorn and the Q3 time of Alonso. I mean, not even getting the car in Q3, but qualifying P7 and bettering the time of Force India. And although I think it was the case that Ocon did not get the DRS, I think they said something like that. But anyway, I don't want to take anything away from Alonso. Really, really great performance. And Vettel, well, you can't say it wasn't a good performance as he started on the front row, but when I saw the second sector, I mean, on his pole lap, he was like nearly half a second up on what Hamilton did. And yeah, he lost it all in the last chicane, didn't he?
Yeah, I think in the middle sector he was like 4 tenths up or something like that, and then I mean, it was all looking pretty good for him for a pole position, but yeah, he locked up in coming into the chicane, and which undid all of his hard work. And you could hear the team radio afterwards, you know, he was pretty disappointed with himself about that. I mean, the gap again was so close. I mean, I think it was half a tenth between Hamilton and Vettel for on the front row. So yeah, if it wasn't for that mistake, he probably would have had pole position, but you know, he made the mistake at the end of the day. But that qualifying session was it was quite exciting actually, because once again we've seen these two, you know, Hamilton and Vettel really going for it, and again the gap that was there at the end really suggests how close that these two are.
Yeah, but that last turn is really, really tricky. I mean, I messed it up so many times in F1 2016 or R Factor or whatever simulator I was doing the lap. And what is your opinion? Do you think, or I mean, some people say it's one of the worst corners in Formula One and so on. The old last turn Barcelona was so much better. What's your opinion on that? How do you like those last few corners in Barcelona?
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, it would be quite incredible if we still had the old final turn, because, you know, as you come up the rise, it's just you'd be pretty much flat out the whole way. down the hill and round the final corner. Again, I think it would have been, especially with this generation of cars that are quite tricky to follow each other, I don't think it would have been very efficient to have a corner like that. So I don't really see anything wrong with the final chicane. It sort of gives a chance for a driver behind to maybe, come in a bit closer to the car ahead. Because I think if we did have the old final corner, it would just be a bit of a mess, and there'd be massive lifting off due to the car mm-hmm. being unable to follow the other car, which would in turn, we wouldn't really do it. There probably wouldn't be any overtaking at the end of the straight. So I think the way it is now, I think is okay. I've never had a problem with it, so yeah, I don't really mind it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it's not the best complex of corners, but it has its challenges. I mean, you've got that penultimate turn. Oh no, it's the turn before the chicane, where you you really have to position your car on the you can't really position it on the complete right side of the track because you're still doing the exit of the corner before. So I think it's quite tricky. It has its challenges. Of course, it's not the most excitable corner to watch. Well, chicanes a lot of the times aren't. not counting the swimming pool chicane in Monaco, of course, which is pretty spectacular. But I'm with you there. I think it's quite a good compromise there in Barcelona. And yeah, I think it showed in the race that it's not impossible to overtake with that. And yeah, let's go through the race then. And yeah, Mercedes showed good starts in the first races of the season. Ferrari, not too bad, but they always seem to lack a little bit. And I think Ferrari brought a new starting system to Spain, or at least they added a new pedal to the steering wheel. Do you know what exactly they added? I just heard like a new pedal system where they maybe I'm not sure. Do you know what they exactly added to the car or to the steering wheel?
Yeah, it was they brought in a new clutch system that actually mirrors the Mercedes system, because I mean there was a comment by Hamilton on the Saturday that mm-hmm. when he said to Vettel, "I see you've changed your starting system," and he was referring to the new clutch system that Ferrari have, which is identical to Mercedes now, so which is quite interesting.
What does it do? Do you know?
I'm not entirely sure. I mean, what exactly it does? I mean, I'm not too sure. But I mean, potentially it is different than the old one anyway, because that's why they have a new one in. So yeah, all I know is that it's pretty similar to Mercedes. But that's all I really know on that. But I do find that quite interesting. The fact that, it's a bit of a, rivalry, looking into another car and saying, oh, that looks good, let's copy that. We could see Mercedes doing that on something on Ferrari's car later in the season. So, I mean, it's not like it's illegal. So, it's good fun for us, but I'm sure Mercedes probably aren't best pleased that Ferrari have copied them.
I think that could also be one of the new, one point of the new strategy of Ferrari. I mean, I think in the last few years, Ferrari always, they stuck to their concept, focused on themselves. And I think from this season onward, I think they also said it, that they want to look more what rivals are doing, and if necessary they want to copy it to their own car. So maybe that was the first step of something like that.
Yeah, possibly. These new cars are so complicated. Any Formula One car is complicated, but I guess they're more sensitive to so many different things. And I said before, so many little details in these cars mix up so much time. So if Ferrari do think that Mercedes has a better system than theirs, I mean, there's no shame in going out and copying it if it's going to make their car faster. So
yeah, and obviously, I mean, in our preview episode, we already talked about those big upgrades, and everyone thought like, yeah, Red Bull will turn up with a completely new car, and everyone will be stunned and so on. And well, you couldn't really see too much of a difference on the Red Bull. Of course, well, they had a little bit of they modified their barge boards a little bit, but other than that, there were not so many visual differences. However, looking at the Mercedes, I was quite surprised, and I think many people were surprised. It was like a completely new car. There were so many new parts on it, new front, new nose, new camera mountings, new barge boards, like the whole front of the car was new. I mean, I was really impressed by that.
Yeah, absolutely. It was quite astonishing really to see how much of a difference that they made to the car. I guess probably the biggest thing that sort of came out at me straight away was the nose and the whole front wing. I guess it was much more slimmer, and yeah, and then around the side they had the slope, which, you know, it's all directed at aerodynamics. Everything like this is directed at aerodynamics. And this year, I mean, we spoke all year long, even at the end of last year, we talked about this development race and how it's going to be so vital in the over the course of the season. And Spain was really the first big, you know, vantage point for these sort of upgrades and who can make the first big leap in development. And I think visually Mercedes came out with the biggest prize, but I mean, it's not always about what you can see. So I mean, I guess the next few races we'll be able to figure out really who has made the best job. But yeah, it still could be, hopefully it's still very close, like it has been up to now.
Yeah, thankfully Ferrari also brought some upgrades, well, maybe some under the hood. Well, yeah, qualifying was close. A race, Vettel had a brilliant start, at least the second phase of the start, overtook Hamilton, and yeah, behind them it got a little bit tight into turn one. Bottas on the inside, Kimi in the middle, Verstappen on the outside. How did you see that? First of all, I thought it was like both cars. First of all, I thought like both cars went wide into turn one, and Verstappen did not go around the bollard, and Kimi just crashed into him. But yeah, in the second view in the replay, I saw what happened. So yeah, how did you see that incident?
Yeah, well, I think it was just you know, three cars going into one tight corner. It just doesn't really work. I mean, none of them really were entirely at fault, because Bottas, if you look at Bottas's car, I mean, his the whole right side of the car, his right wheels were actually on the green part of the curb. So he was, you know, pretty tight to the apex.
Just as you said it, I remembered it's basically the same as the turn one incident in Russia, where also, yeah, Palmer was really on the inside of the curb, three cars into turn one, so pretty similar, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I think Russia might just be a little bit tighter than that, but
yeah, of course.
But yeah, I mean, the characteristics, I guess, of the incident were pretty similar. And then, yeah, I think, well, all the cars have to turn in the one direction to get through the corner. So, and when just not enough space for these cars, you know, a collision is inevitable. And I mean, Bottas got away with the incident, but Raikkonen and Verstappen were put out straight away, which was very unfortunate for them. There was nothing really any of them could do, because once, you know, Kimi hit into Bottas, you know, that was a racing incident, and then he had no control over his car and hit Verstappen. So, yeah, it was a shame for them to be put out. But, I think it was just pretty much a racing incident, because, yeah, I don't think you can blame anyone.
Yeah.
We're looking at it from all angles, there's no one really you can blame for it. And I think the stewards got it right when they deemed it a racing incident.
Absolutely agree, and I was really astonished that nobody crashed into them when they came back into the middle of the track, basically, there at the exit of turn two. I mean, like, everyone tried to avoid them, and yeah, that's also where Fernando Alonso's race, well, it did not end, but it ruined it. Maybe a good points paying position. Massa avoided the two cars and put Alonso onto the grass. Very unfortunate, really.
Yeah, it was unfortunate because I mean, Massa had no choice to turn to swerve right, because he would have potentially hit the Verstappen that was and Raikkonen that were coming back on track. Yeah, and it's just a shame that Alonso, you know, it's just more bad luck for him. He was at the wrong place at the wrong time, and yeah, went through the gravel and lost a lot of positions, and yeah, well, yeah, and I guess his race never really recovered from that, but yeah, I think it was unfortunate for him at that moment to be where he was, but yeah, again, like, that incident was investigated, but I think it was cleared up pretty quickly that Massa couldn't really. You know, Massa couldn't really do anything else. Otherwise, a crash, he would have just slammed into the cars coming back onto the track. So I think that was the right decision too.
And from then on, it was really a case of, has Mercedes or Ferrari, who has the better strategy from then on? Vettel was able to get away from Hamilton quite a bit on those softer tires. And yeah, then Mercedes tried to maybe do the undercut, but Ferrari reacted quickly. I think it was a good strategy, actually, to cover that off. And yeah, from then on, Vettel came out at first behind a Red Bull, and I thought, oh no, is it now the reverse of Australia, where he gets stuck behind one of the Red Bulls? But he cleared him. Then he had Bottas in front of him, also lost a lot of time. And yeah, then Hamilton went into the medium tires, and also that move, first move of Ferrari to cover the undercut, was really good on strategy, and also the move of Mercedes to go on the medium tires was I think the best decision. How did you see that?
Yeah, I was actually pretty happy to see these differing strategies, because so far this year, you know, the strategies have been sort of, you know, really predictable with these new hard, more durable compounds of tires. The strategy has been pretty easy to predict, and it was sort of refreshing to have these different sort of strategies playing out in Barcelona. And you know, in hindsight, you could always look back and judge what was the best strategy, but yeah, I think it just made the race much more exciting to have these different strategies with Vettel on the soft tire and Hamilton on the medium. So yeah, it was all it just made the race, I think, much more exciting.
Yeah, and it seemed like Hamilton had really good pace on those medium tires, because he was not that much slower than Vettel on the soft tires. Of course, Vettel's soft tires were quite a bit older, and he needed to make them last, but pace was good by Hamilton, right?
Yeah, it was. I think Vettel's tires were, like, I think 7 or 8 laps older than Hamilton's. But yeah, I mean, I think Mercedes, one of the big upgrades that Mercedes brought was to do with tires, something to do with the weight transfer and how it's been affecting tires. So they've been looking into that, and perhaps it's one part of the upgrade that's worked better, because so far this year we've seen that Ferrari have been a little bit better on their tires. And yeah, I think Mercedes, you know, somehow have maybe closed in that sort of advantage that Ferrari have had, because they really made those medium tires work pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, after that, a very, very strange incident between Stoffel Vandoorne and Felipe Massa followed, I think, that brought out the virtual safety car. I mean, I was watching and I thought, like, what the hell that went on through there? He basically turned in like Massa wasn't there, you know. It's like, I think I read somewhere that he looked in the mirrors and Massa was so far behind he didn't even believe he could come close to him. But I mean, normally before braking, knowing that there's a car behind, maybe even in the DRS zone, you should look in your mirrors. I mean, that was so strange.
Yeah, that's what happens when you have a Honda powered yes. car, you know. Yeah, you're right, though. That was a really strange incident. And I mean, Van Doorn, he's not finding Formula One easy at the moment.
No.
I mean, made his debut in 2016, had a sensational race and claimed McLaren's first points of the season last year. But this year, I mean, it couldn't really be going any worse. I think he's dropped out of in Q1 every race so far.
I'm not sure.
I believe so. I mean, you know, just going back to qualifying, and like we said before, I mean, when you contrast his performance to Alonso's, you know, it's really just you can see the difference there, and it's a shame because I think Van Doorn, I don't think anyone really doubts his quality and his potential. Yeah. And I think, you know, he's finding things difficult there, and perhaps that's maybe making him struggle because that incident was very. Yeah, very strange. He, I mean, to us, it seems so clear, you know, Massa was alongside him and suddenly, you know, he just turned in and hit him and ended his race. You know, Massa, the second time, he hit the other McLaren at the start of the race and then he hit that one, or that one, he was hit by that one later in the race. But yeah, it was really strange because it was just so unexpected because, you know, we see cars go side by side so often and then, yeah, you think the car is going to yield the position, but it's not even like he tried to hang around the outside. He just fully turned into him, which I think is very strange from Van Doorn. It's not the kind of thing you'd expect to see from him, and you could see in here after he was pretty disappointed with himself. But you know, it's Monaco next for McLaren for Formula One. I think McLaren. It's going to be their strongest race of the year, definitely. So maybe he'll be looking for that to do something to bounce back from his incident.
Well, he's got a 3 places penalty in Monaco, I think, from that incident. So yeah, not the best of starts for that weekend. But yeah, it seems like both rookies, like I mean, Van Doorn, Stroll, they're really having problems this season, and I really wonder. I mean. It's not like they don't know how to drive. I mean, I think both are good drivers. They know how to race and so on. So what could it be? I think this season it seems to be much harder to get those tires into the right window. And maybe like being 5 or 10 degrees outside this window means like you're half a second slower per lap. I mean, that's the only explanation I could have there because, I mean, the drivers on that level, they are not stupid. They are good drivers. It's the same with Palmer. I can't really understand why he's so far off Hülkenberg. It's not like he doesn't know how to break into a corner or to take a lot of speed into a corner. It must have something to do with tires, in my opinion. So, yeah, maybe that's also one of the reasons why the top teams are so far ahead of the midfield team. So yeah, I think that's a whole new topic for another episode, maybe. Yeah, we as I said, a virtual safety car followed, and Ferrari decided not to pit. I was asking myself in that situation, would I have pitted? I'm not sure. Of course, it was a little bit of a risky move, but pitting under the virtual safety car saves you plenty of time, and Hamilton did that, and maybe that won him the race.
Yeah, I think so. I think it ultimately did, along with a lot of skill from Hamilton.
Yeah, of course.
Because of course, when he came into the pits, he put on the soft tire, but there was still just over, just under half the race to go, and he was on the softest compound, so. You know, Hamilton had to use all of his experience and all of his skill to make sure that he could keep up the speed but not make the tires deteriorate a lot. And yeah, what we got from that I guess, whole sequence was a fantastic battle.
Yeah, the fantastic battle into turn one after Vettel pitted the next lap. I mean, when I saw Vettel exiting the pit, I was like, yeah, should be enough. But then Hamilton car became bigger and bigger and bigger, and I was like, uh-oh, that's going to be close. And you could really see Vettel was braking really, really late. I mean, and yeah, both cars touched, and I think other drivers might have crashed, but yeah, I think both drivers judged it brilliantly. I mean, Vettel basically did a Hamilton there. I mean, Hamilton loves to push other drivers off track. I just say USA 2015 or Suzuka, when was it, 16 or 15, I don't know. I mean, it's hard racing, and I'm pretty happy that the stewards did not interfere with that.
Yeah, and this is what we've been waiting for. You know, this sort of not only just sort of close and intense battle, but you know, a battle between Sebastian Vettel and Lewis Hamilton. I mean, there's people out there that don't like Sebastian Vettel, and there's people out there that don't like Lewis Hamilton. But you know, I can tell you now, what we're watching, what we're witnessing this season is Formula One history. I mean, we will look back on this. We will look back on this in 20, 30 years, and you know, see this as a really, really exciting battle in Formula One, like we had with, you know, Senna Prost or Schumacher and Hakkinen, you know, those sort of types of battles. And you know, you can be guaranteed that that's what we're witnessing now, and it's so close. It's so close. And you know, the people that are reluctant to say to agree with what I'm saying and about how we're witnessing, you know, a really, really exciting battle on our hands, and you know, Formula One history. But that's what it is. I mean,
yeah,
just because we're in this era of Formula One that gets a lot of criticism because of the cars and because of the way that it's run, doesn't mean that we can't, you know, sit back and enjoy the action that's out on track. And that's what we're witnessing here. And even at the end of the season, we'll look back and think, well, I think in my opinion, we'll look back and say, what a fantastic season between two monster manufacturers, two of the greatest drivers in Formula One history. I mean, 7 world titles between them, and there could be 8 by the end of the season. So I mean, this is what we want to see throughout the rest of the season: close wheel to wheel action. And if we have at least half of that action throughout the rest of the season, I think we're in for a real treat.
The only concern I have is reliability of Ferrari. I think they used already 3 turbos and, like, I don't know, two internal combustion engines, and they're really going through their parts. And Mercedes, they're only on their second everything with Hamilton, at least. Well, not so with Bottas, who sadly retired in the Spanish GP due to, well, yeah, they discovered a water leak just before qualifying, had to put the Russian GP engine in again, and yeah, it was not able to do the full race distance. So yeah, I just hope that reliability will not, or grid penalties will not decide this awesome battle between Hamilton and Vettel.
Yeah, reliability, you know, is always an issue in Formula One. Well, I think in the modern day, reliability has come a long way compared to what it was like many, many years ago. But of course, there still always is that danger, and usually every race there's at least one retirement due to something going boom, or like we've seen in
as long as McLaren is in Formula One, it's guaranteed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Alonso made the checker flag this time, so
yeah.
And Van Doorn crashed out. He didn't crash out with a car problem, so maybe things are improving there. Maybe not. Yeah, I mean, reliability is definitely an issue, and could potentially influence the championship. But again, I mean, that's all part of it, and you got to accept that. Hopefully it doesn't come down to that. Hopefully it comes down to, you know, who wins from out and out pace. But yeah, it could happen, and if it does happen, you know, it's part of the sport. But yeah, I'd like to see it happen out on track. And yeah, coming back to what you said about Bottas retiring, I think that was the engine that he's used in pretty much every race so far.
All the races.
So I mean, it's not really a surprise that it gave up. But what makes me sort of not sad, but I don't know, that retirement, it just felt, you know, when it happened, you were like, oh, Bottas retired, and then suddenly it felt like a really quick progression to you know, what the outcome of the race would be. And yeah, I feel a bit bad for Bottas, because it sort of seems now that he could be slipping into a number two role.
Same with Kimi. Yeah,
but I mean, I think with Ferrari it's sort of different. I mean, Ferrari have been using that philosophy for years now. I mean, you think all the way back to when Schumacher was there with Barrichello and you know, Raikkonen and Massa and Alonso and Massa, and I think now it's I think it's more surprising with Mercedes, because even when it was Schumacher and Rosberg there, it was, you know, they were equal. I mean, Rosberg relatively outperformed Schumacher, but you know, there was no number one, number two, and even with Hamilton and Rosberg, they were 100% equal. But now that there's another team in the championship, if Bottas can't improve his results, there's a real danger that he's going to slip into a number two role, which would be a shame for him, because I think he's a better driver than that. So yeah, I think the next couple of races will be very, very career defining for Bottas. And I just hope, well, of course, you'd like to see as many drivers compete for the championship as possible, and there's no reason why he can't. So hopefully he'll make some good results in the next few races.
Yeah, I mean, there are plenty of races to go. There's so much. So much can happen. I mean, Vettel and Hamilton could crash. Hamilton could have another engine failure, and boom, Bottas is back in the championship fight. Who knows? I mean, it can go quickly. So, yeah, of course, as you said, it could be career defining. He only has a 1-year contract with Mercedes. So, yeah, let's see how that plays out. But yeah, after the retirement, I think it was after the retirement, or was it before? Vettel and Hamilton went on to their last stint. Vettel on the mediums, Hamilton on the softs, and yeah, Hamilton was so much quicker on those soft tires, and also having the Mercedes engine in the back. As soon as Vettel did not have the DRS off the back markers, I think it was quite easy to pass for Hamilton, and I think you could quite see the difference. I mean, when you compare Vettel overtaking Bottas on a pretty old set of soft tires, it was still pretty hard for Vettel to overtake him, but Hamilton just breezed past Vettel. So I think there's still a bit of an engine advantage for Mercedes, or their car has a last drag compared to the Ferrari.
Potentially Mercedes do have some sort of engine.
Maybe. I noticed that as well in Bahrain, you know, at the safety car restart, where Bottas just had that, I don't know, that engine mode that really, really unlocked a lot of power there.
Yeah. I mean, Mercedes haven't really made much of a secret of the fact that they do have some sort of secret, I guess, extra mode that they can turn up for extra power. And yeah, I think Mercedes probably do have some sort of a engine or a power advantage over Ferrari. But how pivotal is that? I'm not too sure. I mean, I don't think it's vital, but I think Hamilton would have got by him anyway, regardless, because he was just on the softer compound, and he got by him in a pretty easy move. That was the race for him. Then he was able to continue really well. Actually, he was able to do that stint on the soft tires. I mean, just
over
under 20 half the race distance.
Over 20 laps.
I think he pitted on lap 37, And
amazing. You even doing the fastest lap at the end there. So
yeah,
they really made good progress on their tire management.
Yeah, it's sort of a, I mean, if this was 2016, there's no hope in hell that he would have been able to do that sort of stint on the soft tire. And I mean, it's good to see that the drivers are able to push more on the tire. It's just like I said before, the fact that strategy also played a part in that, and the fact that drivers were able to push hard on their tires, I think is something that we mightn't see, you know, the two things in one race a lot this season, and I think it was good to see that in Spain.
Yeah, definitely was quite enjoyable. I think the race lived from the tension who will get out in front or who has the right strategy. And I think good strategy by both teams. Mercedes' strategy was maybe a little bit better. Of course, well, you can't. They reacted to Ferrari and they reacted in a pretty good way, to put it this way. And in the end, of course, Vettel won. Hamilton won. Vettel second, and a pretty lonely race for Daniel Ricciardo in P3. It was like 75 seconds behind. I mean, we've really got two top teams at the front, and then nothing. Red Bull, then nothing, and then the rest. I mean, that's an issue the new owners of Formula One need to have a look at, because I mean the difference between it's like basically a different category. Every other car was lapped, which is quite phenomenal, and it's a bit the gap in the performance is a bit too big in my opinion. And so after discussing the race in detail now, really, let's go over to our next segment that is called Driver of the Weekend. Driver of the Weekend. We discuss which driver showed the best performances in practice, quali, and race. So, Driver of the Weekend, and I go first. I think it's pretty clear from... Well, I thought a few minutes ago, it's pretty clear, but now I still have to decide. I think I need to decide between Pascal Wehrlein, really, really good race in the Sauber, of course, Sauber with a year-old Ferrari engine in P7. Well, no, he wasn't P7, but he had a five-second penalty, which meant he finished P8. So really good performance from him, good points for Sauber. But also I really want to say Fernando Alonso, because that qualifying was so good, and it's driver of the weekend, not race, and his race was really destroyed by that first lap incident, which wasn't his fault. And after that, he passed even cars with a Honda engine, so it's a bit difficult. Also Hülkenberg with a good race, I picked him last time out, I think. Pretty difficult. I think I'll go with Wehrlein. I think I'll go with Wehrlein. Pretty good race. Of course, it was a bit stupid to have that incident in the pit lane entry, which cost him P7. But in a Sauber, which normally shouldn't be points finishing car, I think he made it count into a race. I'll go with Pascal Wehrlein.
Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that Pascal Wehrlein is my driver of the weekend. I mean, not only did he get points for Sauber, but he also made it out of Q1 once again, showing, he showed this last year in the manner as well. I mean, Wehrlein is such like. He doesn't get. I don't think he gets the praise he deserves, to be honest. I mean, I think he's a pretty phenomenal driver, and to get out of Q1 and I don't think that Sauber is actually as bad as people feared it would be this season. I actually think Sauber have made not a bad car at all. Well, certainly not competitive, but I don't think it's as bad as people thought it would be. Wehrlein, I mean, unbelievable job he did in Spain. I mean, he did the same amount of laps on the soft tire than he did on the medium tire. Mm. He did 33 laps on the soft and 33 in the medium, which is, I mean, says a lot about it either says a lot about how much the tires degrade or how much skill he has, one or the other. But yeah, in that Sauber that Manny predicted might not get points this season. And then, I mean, now he's 4 points, and it's his greatest ever result in Formula One. Before that, it was 10th. And you said, actually, it was unfortunate he had a 5 second penalty. I don't think it was. I think it was actually a blessing that he had that penalty, because if he came into the pits under the virtual safety car, I believe. He came in under the virtual safety car, which meant because of a late call. So that was the way he was able to work his strategy. So if he had to stay out, it would have been different. So he even said himself that those 5 seconds were worth taking rather than staying out. So yeah, well done to him. I mean, it's a great weekend for him and for Sauber.
Absolutely. So yeah, we agree on the driver of the weekend this time, and yeah, next week we'll preview the Monaco GP, and I think you need to get your crystal ball out again, because last time it was pretty good, right? I think you predicted both Finns crashing into turn one or something.
Yeah, in our last episode, when we previewed the race, I said, well, actually, at first I said that the podium would be Vettel, Hamilton, Ricciardo, and unfortunately it was Hamilton, Vettel, Ricciardo. I
got nearly, you know, nearly.
Yeah, and then I said that Bottas and Raikkonen would crash, and there you go, turn one, it happened. So yeah, I think I'll revel over my crystal ball over the week and see what I can come up with for next week's preview.
Okay, so it will definitely be an interesting episode. So if you want to know how the Monaco GP will finish, you'll hear it first in our episode next week. So yeah, thank you very much for listening again this week. And if you want to contact us, at FLF1 Podcast on Twitter. So thank you very much. Until next week, goodbye.
Goodbye.